This week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, we'll preview a big series between number 2 Arkansas and number 3 Ole Miss this weekend at Swayze Field in Oxford. Clay Matvick, who will call Friday's game for SEC Network, will join us to give his thoughts on the Razorbacks and Rebels. We'll also be joined by Paris Alford of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal for a closer look at Ole Miss. Plus, Arkansas pitching coach Matt Hobbs gives insight into the dynamite cutter that is being thrown by Razorback ace reliever Kevin Copps this season. All of that and much more is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Massage Envy.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the only podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Now, here's Matt Jones and Seth Campbell.
Aston Kerstad, Jack Kenley, Casey Opitz, 5, 6, and 7 for the Hawks. Oh, my. Oh, my. Gone, home run. Aston Kerstad with another mammoth shot. He has had many this year. That's number 16, and it's 9-1.
Coming into the season, most people believed that the SEC West would be decided over the course of 3 series early in the first half of the season between Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State. And it's week 4 of the SEC season, so it's too early to say if the division will be won this week. But you have to believe that if Arkansas comes out of Oxford, the Razorbacks are going to have a leg up to win the SEC West, given the fact that the Razorbacks just a couple of weeks ago went to Starkville and swept Mississippi State at Duty Noble Field. Ole Miss goes to Mississippi State next week. Arkansas and Ole Miss enter this weekend series tied atop the SEC West. Both teams are 7-2 in conference play this season. The Razorbacks have won all of their series. They defeated Alabama and Auburn 2 of 3 times at Baumwalker Stadium and, of course, swept Mississippi State a couple of weeks ago. Ole Miss began the SEC season with a 6-0 record with series wins over Auburn and Alabama, but they got tripped up last weekend in their trip to Gainesville, lost 2 of 3 to Florida. So they're both 7-2. They're ranked number 2. The Razorbacks are. The Rebels are number 3 in the USA Today Baseball Coaches Poll. That's the highest ranked matchup that Arkansas has ever had in the coaches poll. The previous highest ranked matchup was 2 weeks ago when Arkansas went to Starkville. The Razorbacks were ranked number 2 that weekend. Mississippi State was number 4. This series is a 2-versus-3 series. It's obviously the biggest series of the weekend in college baseball, not just in the SEC. And there's going to be a lot of eyes when the teams play. The man behind the microphone Friday night when they play at 6 o'clock on SEC Network is going to be Clay Matvick, and he joins us now to help us preview the series. And Clay, we appreciate you taking some time for us.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me, Matt. I appreciate it.
Hey, so you called Arkansas's 2019 Super Regional against Ole Miss. Seems like forever ago, but it's only been about 22 months. And you get to call them on Friday night. This seems like this is just, I know it's not for a trip to Omaha, but it seems like it's just as big of a series between these two as, you know, when they met in game 3 a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, these teams haven't met in almost 2 years, and I do the last one for the Supers in Fayetteville in 19, and that was a fun 3-game series. So they obviously sent the Hawks back to Omaha. There was a lot on the line then. There's a lot on the line now. You know, you've got both teams tied atop the SEC West. Ironically, you know, not only am I calling this matchup again, I believe it's going to be the same pitching matchup as it was in game 3 of the Supers 2 years ago. Hoagland for Ole Miss and Patrick Wicklander for Arkansas. What are the chances of that? Neither guy, as I remember, pitched very well that day, but for Arkansas, it really didn't matter that Wicklander, you know, I don't think he got out of the second inning because the Hogs scored 14 that day. But, you know, this is going to be Wicklander's 3rd consecutive start since rejoining the rotation, and he's pitched well the last couple of outings. So Hoagland and Wicklander, that should be fun. It was fun 2 years ago in Fayetteville. The place was a madhouse then. This time it's in Oxford. and they're wide open down there. So it should be a madhouse at Swayze too.
You have this is the first game you've called of Arkansas this year, but I'm sure you've watched them from afar. You've studied them. What have been your impressions of watching them this year?
Well, the good thing for Arkansas right now is they're playing about as well as they can. They've won 12 of their last 13. The environment down there in Mississippi is not going to be any worse than it was in Starkville here a few weeks ago. You know, and that turned out all right for the Hogs. I mean, they're about as sharp right now as any team, not only in the SEC, but in the country. The thing about Arkansas, you know, even though their starting pitching hasn't been that consistent, Wicklander, Vermillion, Lockhart, Paulette, you know, they've kind of had to figure out, you know, who's going to start when and where and make it work. But their bullpen has bolstered that staff. Costu, Copps. Copps has been outstanding this year. He wasn't very good last year, but he's mastered his sinker. That's been devastating, and that bullpen has won him a lot of games. So that's been huge. So the bullpen has helped the pitching out, and the offense is always there for Arkansas. That always seems to stand out. Dave Van Horn just kind of revamps better than anybody in college baseball. They don't have down cycles there. It seems like he always brings in the right parts. The true freshman Keaton Wallace has started almost every game. He's a bigger kid who can hit for power. Brady Slavens has been a great addition, the first baseman. I think he had was it last night or two nights ago? He had five ribbies in the game.
Yeah, on Wednesday night.
Little Rock. It was two last night. Yeah, so I mean he's been outstanding coming out of the JUCO ranks. Then you mix in the vets. Christian Franklin, definitely going to be a first round pick. He's got power, can steal bases. Plays a very good center field. Matt Goodhart has been a fun story. I he was on the team a couple of years ago when I followed him and got out to a slow start this year. But, he's made some adjustments at the plate, and his swing is starting to come around again. And that's kind of what I remember from 2 years ago. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, Matt, but in 2019, I think he was having a hard time seeing at night, mm-hmm. and then went in, got his eyes checked, and found out that he actually needed contacts or better contacts. Then he ends up hitting, like 370 in conference games. I mean, it was just something ridiculous
that.
So now he's kind of made an adjustment mid-season again, and it's working out.
Yeah, he needed contacts. It wasn't just during night games. He was having trouble seeing, period. Found himself squinting too much at pitches and got contacts, and it was like he was a different player. After that point, I remember a couple of years ago, Clay, when you guys were here, I think you were here with Todd Walker, and you were interviewing Mike Bianco and Dave Van Horn walked up. I was kind of sitting a couple of tables away from you guys, and I think we had talked just before that about it was going to be their 62nd, 63rd, and 64th meeting between the head coaches. And I think only Ron Polk and Skip Bertman had met more times among SEC head coaches. You talked to them about that, and I know that you saw them interact with one another. There seems to be a lot of mutual respect between those two head coaches.
Well, there's no doubt. And thanks for reminding me about that. I've got to go back and figure out exactly where they are now in the series. And just where that compares with Polk and Skip Bertman, because that's very noteworthy. I had totally forgotten about that. And you're right, there is a mutual respect. I mean, you've got Bianco, who's the dean of coaches in the SEC, and Dave Van Horn, who's not far behind. And they've made, multiple super regional appearances. They've made trips to Omaha. Mike Bianco and Ole Miss haven't had the runs to Omaha like Dave Van Horn have, but, there aren't two better coaches in the SEC West. And, I'd argue that there probably aren't two better coaches in college baseball in general. And certainly there is a mutual respect between the two. They've been in this league a long time. The matchups are always entertaining. You know, when we came into Fayetteville a couple of years ago, Todd and I, we knew it was going three games. We knew there was no way that was going to be two and done either way. And it was an entertaining series. It got a little lopsided in the Sunday game. I think it was Sunday. Maybe it was Monday, the game three. But
you know, those were entertaining games. The crowds were energized, and Ole Miss and Arkansas is always fun. And a lot of it has to do with who the coaches are.
It's not SEC football where coaches are shown the door every 3 or 4 years, but still in baseball, to be at a program for as long as those two have and as competitive as the SEC West is, I think that's really impressive.
No, it is. And I feel like maybe, you know, an injury for Ole Miss has happened at a really poor time. I mean, they're always at a bad time. Mm-hmm. But specifically coming into this weekend for Ole Miss, I mean, they lose first baseman Tim Elko, who's leading the SEC in RBIs. He suffered that ACL on Monday. He's going to be out for a while. We talked to Bianco earlier today, and it's not that he's officially done for the year, but he's going to be done probably for at least 3 to 4 weeks. And then they'll reevaluate it and see if he can maybe finish out the season, play on it a little bit before he has surgery in the offseason. But there's also potential he's done for the year. But, you know, because Mike Bianco is such a good head coach and they have, you know, so many guys who are hitting over 300, they'll plug somebody else in, and that offense is still going to be devastating to deal with.
I want to ask you real quick about calling games during COVID. You guys are calling from your home. What's your setup like? And have you fully gotten used to it yet?
No, you know, every game is a learning experience, just because, you know, I think I've only done 5 or 6, and actually I'm not doing them from home. I wanted to, but my internet stinks here so bad. I mean, it practically, I think it runs on unleaded gasoline. It's so outdated. But so I had to go rent an office space in town and get to a spot where it had better internet. And so I've done that, and I've had great success with the internet, and my signal's been good. I'm learning as I go. I do like the fact that we don't travel, because, you know, there was a season here a couple of years ago where I was on the road 140 nights from the start of football season to the end of the Little League season in early August. And so the fact that I get done with the game and within 10 or 15 minutes I'm back in my living room, you know, drinking a cold beverage is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. But it's a challenge. You know, you're not going to see everything. You're not going to be able to be as instinctive with what's going on the field by reading the dugout, by, you know, checking the top step after a pitcher throws a fourth one out of the zone and it's a walk. You know, mm-hmm. You're starting to read. You can see the bullpens from the press box. That doesn't happen in this setup. So you've got to take some things for granted. You've got some ears and eyes that are helping you out at the stadium. You're counting on your stats guy a lot more. It's different, but there are also some good things with it, too.
And you're going to be calling a lot of games this weekend in a lot of different locations.
Yep, we've got the game tomorrow night with Arkansas and Ole Miss. And then on Sunday, I'm doing an ESPN2 game between Ohio State and Michigan. And, of course, Michigan made that great College World Series run here just a couple of years ago. So, and then, you know, I just have been handed probably 20 baseball games for the rest of April and May. And it's all going to be done remotely.
Interesting.
Yeah, all right. It is.
Well, Clay, I appreciate your time.
No, thanks, Matt. Look forward to seeing you in person again here sometime real soon, and I'm looking forward to seeing the Hogs.
Clay Matvick of ESPN SEC Network. He'll be on the call Friday night along with Ben McDonald when the Razorbacks and Rebels play at 6 o'clock. As we said, that game will be on SEC Network. The other two games in the series will be on SEC Network Plus. Game times Saturday are 4 o'clock and Sunday 1:30 afternoon. When we come back, Seth Campbell will join me, and we will look back at Arkansas' series against Auburn last week. We'll also talk a little bit about the Razorbacks' 2 wins over UALR in the midweek. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast presented by Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy.
It's been a lot of fun to watch this baseball team because of the way they play. The games seem to almost always be entertaining. Even games that you may not think are going to be that entertaining. You think back to the Southeast Missouri series and the Murray State series. Those were good teams from the Ohio Valley Conference who may get overlooked a little bit, but they played Arkansas well here in Fayetteville, even though the Razorbacks won all seven games against them. But in those games, you saw a lot of comebacks. You've seen it in games before then. You've seen it in games since. And, of course, you saw it twice last weekend when Auburn came to Fayetteville. Arkansas came back from a deficit of four runs in the seventh inning on Friday night to win game two. Then they came back from a deficit of five runs in the sixth inning on Saturday afternoon to win game three. And I think that's now eight games that they've come back from when they trailed by three or more runs. And it's seven games they've won this year, Seth, when they've trailed in the seventh inning or later. And that's got to be really deflating, demoralizing, I would think, if you're the other team and you've got a lead in the seventh, eighth inning. Maybe what you feel is a little bit of a healthy lead, three runs, two runs, four runs, whatever it might be. Just hard to put them away.
Yeah, it shows great resilience on the part of this team, and I think that it's going to stick in this team's mind as well as in fans' mind that come postseason play that it doesn't matter that Arkansas falls behind in the first few innings. In baseball, sometimes teams can almost tighten up in games when it comes down to the stretch that, hey, you know, you may only have nine innings left in your season if you mm-hmm. don't come out on top in this game, and then you start off down two or three runs, teams start to tighten, and every single pitch seems so huge. I don't know that you're going to get that with this Arkansas team because of their approach and just because they've been there. They understand now that, hey, this is something that we can do. We can do this as long as we got three outs to play with. As long as there's another inning, we can come back. And I think that it's shows resilience on the part of this team, but it also just shows a mental toughness that Dave Van Horn and the coaching staff have built into this team.
They remind me of those Mississippi State teams of like 18 and 19. You know, you could never count them out. I think back to, what was it, the 18th season, they were playing the regional in Tallahassee, and Florida State's a strike away or maybe an out away from winning it, and then Elijah McAfee hits a home run that sends Mississippi State on and eliminates Florida State. And they did it the next year against Auburn in the College World Series. Auburn had a meltdown in the eighth or ninth inning and lost to Mississippi State in Omaha and got eliminated. And so that's kind of what this Arkansas team feels like, is that you just can't put them away. And you have to give a lot of credit to the bats for their ability to, you know, just kind of keep coming at you. Butch Thompson, after the one of the games, I guess it was after game three last weekend, you know, said it was like it was like four waves of Arkansas coming at them, and they felt like, you know, okay, we've held them off this time. Can we hold them off the next inning? And of course, they couldn't do it, for enough innings. Arkansas tied it in the ninth and won it in the tenth. You got to give the offense a lot of credit for their approach and their ability to come through in important situations like that. But really, what stands out to me, Seth, has been the bullpen and the way that they've been able to keep Arkansas in games when it really didn't look too good, maybe midway through the game. Starting pitching has been inconsistent this year. You really aren't seeing starters for Arkansas going more than about five innings. If you get them into the sixth, it seems like that's a really good quality start for them. Zebulon Vermilion's had a couple of eight-inning starts, but then he's been batted around quite a bit the last couple of weeks against Mississippi State and Auburn. He's going to fall out of the rotation this weekend. The rotation this weekend is going to be Patrick Wicklander and then Peyton Paulette and then Lyle Lockhart. But going back to the bullpen, they've kept Arkansas in the games, and it just seems like they've kept the deficit at just enough or just manageable enough that the team can get back into it. They kept it at 4 against Auburn in game 2. They kept it at 5. And I think it's a lot harder to come back from a 5-run deficit than a 4-run deficit. It doesn't seem like a whole lot. It's just one run. But I think there's something psychological once you get up into that 5-run, 6-run type that it gets really difficult to come back from that. But the bullpen's been so good this year. We're going to talk about Kevin Copps more here in just a minute, but it's not just him. I think Ryan Costew has given them some really nice innings here lately. Jackson Wiggins, it's not as easy for him now as it was earlier in the season. SEC hitters can hit the fastball better. They've made it they've got a lot more discipline at the plate. They've made it tougher on him. They're not chasing pitches out of the zone like some of the teams were earlier in the season against him. But and what's interesting to me, Seth, is that Caden Monk is pitching better, but they still have not gotten what you think are going to be all their main bullpen guys pitching well. And it's really fascinating to think how good this team could be if Cole Ramage begins to pitch well. He looked okay against UALR earlier this week. That was the best we've seen from him. Can they get Caleb Bolden going again? Can they get the same Caleb Bolden that they got against Texas? Can he get going again? There are a number of other pitchers. They've thrown 21 pitchers this year. Heston Toll against UALR on Wednesday night was the 21st pitcher they've thrown this year. They've got a ton of options in the bullpen, and you still, and this is kind of the way it goes in baseball. You're kind of building up until you get to May and June, but it still feels like there's a lot more that can be built up too from a bullpen perspective.
It's kind of strange with just the consistency that Arkansas has played with on the pitching mound the past few years with a recency bias. Of course, you don't necessarily think that by the middle of April that there still should be question marks, but that's normal in college baseball. And I agree with you, Matt, that there is more to be seen from this bullpen. Arkansas is still finding a starting rotation and trying to figure out who they want to start. And it might be that way all through the season. It just kind of depends who has the hot hand last.
I don't think the starter is so important this year as maybe it has been in the past.
Well, when you have 21 pitchers, right?
It's not just that they've got, the volume of pitchers. It's the production that they're getting from so many of them. I mean, you think back to 18 and 19, the success of a weekend a lot of times was determined by, are Blaine Knight and Isaiah Campbell going to have a really strong start on Friday? You probably even go back and say the same thing in 17 when Trevor Stephan was starting. They had really good bullpen arms, but once you got past maybe that fourth or fifth one, maybe even 4 or 5 is too high of a number. Once you got past a certain threshold, you didn't feel as comfortable. I don't know if that threshold is as low this year. I mean, I mentioned a couple of them earlier, Jackson Wiggins. Of course, Kevin Copps has been so good. Whether Paulette or Vermillion is pitching in the bullpen, I think you probably feel good about what he's going to give you. Connor Noland is somebody that's probably going to be back in a couple of weeks. That gives you another experienced arm out of the bullpen, assuming that he's able to, pitch to the level, that he's pitched in the past. We talked about Costew. We talked about Monk. Zach Morris is someone who's been giving them pretty good innings from the left side. Elijah Trest is
he looked good.
These are a
weekend.
Number of pitchers. These are a number of pitchers that I feel like you can count on and for the most part rely on. When they come out of the bullpen, you don't feel jittery, right? I mean, you feel confident that they're going to probably give you a couple of good outs. Maybe in Copps' situation, he can give you 2-3 good innings, depending on if it's the first time that he's pitching in a weekend. And let's talk about Copps for a minute, because I wanted to get into this. I wrote a long story this week on WholeHogSports.com about Kevin Copps and his cutter, his 2020 season that did not go well. I mean, last year he was hit around, did not have the type of strikeouts that he's had in his past, and the cutter just, it didn't move. And so I talked to him and Matt Hobbs, the pitching coach, about what is the difference this year from last year. And long story short, he's gone back to a two-seam fastball. In 2019, he had some success with a four-seam fastball. They got some swings and misses high in the strike zone. But the release point of the four-seamer affected the depth that he was getting on his cutter. And so after he had trouble in 2020, he called Matt Hobbs and, you know, said, hey, can we – what do you think about if I go back to a two-seamer and try it? And Hobbs had not seen him throw a two-seamer because – you remember Hobbs came in 19, and that was the year after his Tommy John surgery. Kevin Kopp said he felt his Tommy John surgery was kind of a chance to reinvent himself. And really he reinvented himself in a way that, that was not ideal. So he goes back to a two-seam fastball, and he's had a lot of success this year. And I'm going to let Matt Hobbs tell the rest of the story. This is audio from the interview that I did with Matt Hobbs earlier this week. Really, really fascinating. Well-articulated stuff here from the Razorbacks pitching coach.
He's improved his arsenal significantly, and you know, a lot of that started with the want to throw a two-seam fastball instead of a four-seam fastball that he tried to ride to the top of the zone. Because, you know, in 19, he had some success up there being able to elevate at times, and I think that, you know, he saw that that could be a good pitch for him and then kind of went all in on it, and, you know, I think that some of the metrics backed up the fact that he should be able to pitch up there, but you know, for some reason, it did not work. Obviously, it did not work last year. I think it did more than anything is trying to throw more of a four-seam fastball that he was trying to just throw hard was killing his cutter in terms of the movement. So those pitches didn't really work all that well together. So being able to take a rational look after 2020 ended at, all right, what needs to get better? And Kevin really wanting to go back to a two-seam fastball that he threw pretty exclusively in high school, I think, is what he threw in high school. Again, I didn't recruit him, and I wasn't here for the first, you know, couple of years of Kevin's career. But having conversations with Kevin and just saying, hey, you know, I feel real comfortable throwing a two-seam fastball. Is that something that you think would be okay for me to go back to try? And you know, during the shutdown period, it was like, you know, why not? And why not try it? Or the other thing certainly was not working, so why not go to this and just try this out? And I think what it did is it pulled his slot down and got him further away from his head when he was releasing the baseball. So he wasn't trying to get as much trunk tilt, like lateral trunk tilt, when he was throwing the baseball to try to get on top of it and climb. And it's really leveled off his delivery a little bit. So he's not trying to create velocity as much as he's just being able to easily throw his fastball where he wants to now. And as a byproduct, has increased his velocity, and it's also helped his cutter and brought that thing down to being able to move it a little bit more vertically. When you watch it on TV, they all look, you know, they kind of look like almost really hard slurves in terms of the movement. But it's a true alien, man. That pitch is crazy. It has weird spin, and he throws it really hard for the type of pitch that it is in the, you know, 84, 86 mile an hour range. Mm-hmm. And the ball moves. If you think about, you know, zero as being no move, you know, pretty flat movement in terms of like a pitch plane. Last year he was pitching at positive 8 in terms of carry on his cutter. So the pitch was like hovering almost when he was throwing it. It had the same lateral movement, but it had this like big vertical lift. Mm-hmm. And when he's, you know, switched to a two-seam fastball and his slot dropped a little bit, you know, 3 to 4 inches, now the pitch has, you know, 4 to 6 inches of vertical movement that's negative. So he's got a wide split, you know, anywhere from about 10 to 12 inches different than it was last year. So now that pitch is going to be able to move north to south in addition to east to west. So it's got a better, you know, better vertical and a little bit, and now the horizontal movement has a chance. Because when you're thinking about like how a pitch moves, if the ball is carrying up in the zone, it's going to hurt some of the ability to move the ball for Kevin towards his glove side of the plate. It hurts the ability to do that if it's got vertical lift, and you know, being able to suck some of the vertical lift out of it and make it a little bit more, have more depth, allows the horizontal movement to happen.
Kevin Copps, you expect to see him against Ole Miss at least once, maybe twice. I don't think you'll see him three times very often like you did a week ago against Auburn. You could really tell in game three that his pitches were not getting the same type of movement, the same type of depth that they were in the first couple of games. And that's expected, you know, when a pitcher's throwing three times. But he'll go into the Ole Miss series. He'll pitch at some point, and when he does, he'll take a 16 2/3 inning scoreless streak into the game against Ole Miss. He has not given up a run this year, Seth, since February 28th. That was against Southeast Missouri, and that's one of only two runs that he's given up all season. The only other run he gave up, he didn't pitch very well in the first game of the season against Texas Tech. And since then, he's just been absolute, you know, lights out. I mean, he goes into this weekend, a 0.82 ERA. He's got four wins. He's got three saves. In 22 innings, he struck out 40 and walked 7.
Leads the team in strikeouts, by the way. That 40.
Oh, I mean, it's an incredible number.
Is absurd, especially when you go to his innings pitched, which is only 22. And there's multiple guys that have pitched more than he has.
And the batting average against him, 154. It's not just that he's getting a lot of swings and misses. People aren't making contact against him almost at all. The cutter is incredible. It's one of the best. I remember a couple of years ago, I polled kind of, obviously I'm not a pollster, so it was, you know, real informal, but I polled a lot of players on the team. What's the best pitch on the baseball team? And almost every response back was Kevin Kopp's cutter. It was like the pitchers envied it and the hitters feared it. They did not want to see that thing in scrimmages, but it makes them better, you know, when they see it. And it was a really good pitch then. It's so much better now, though. It's got so much more depth. You heard Matt Hobbs talk about maybe 10 to 12 inches more of depth than it had last season. And so Kevin Kopps, here in a couple of weeks, the baseball writers will update their stopper of the year watch list. And you got to believe he's going to be on that. He's been in, I can't imagine that there are many more dominant relief pitchers than he has been this year. And you know what stands out to me too? One more thing is that against Mississippi State, that four inning save he had, it was wrapped around a 1 hour and 15 minute rain delay. That's an abnormal outing. And against Auburn, three appearances, five innings of shutout baseball. That's an abnormal outing for a college pitcher to pitch three times in a weekend like that. So it's not like these are just, you know, real ideal situations that he's pitching in. He's having to deal with, you know, some unique settings, I think, in order to pitch the way that he is.
Yeah, he's definitely flexible. He's not one of those guys that you have to worry about his mental health when he's going into a game about the situation that he's put him in. He just wants to pitch.
Yeah. Really smart guy, really thoughtful guy. As I was talking to him this week, I mean, you can kind of see it in the interviews that people see on Zoom. I was able to talk to him for about 15 minutes this week. So well thought out in his answers, really thinks through his answers. And so real smart. And I think, you know, you see that on the diamond that are on the mound, really pitches smart as well, I think. When we come back, we are going to preview Ole Miss with Parrish Alford of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. We'll talk about the number 3 Rebels and the impact of Tim Elko's torn ACL without their best hitter, their first baseman, maybe for the rest of the year. We'll talk about that with Parrish when we come back. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast presented by Massage Envy.
Massage Envy with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video on Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video on Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Let's take a look at the week ahead, presented by Grease Pig.
It's Arkansas against Ole Miss this weekend in Oxford at Swayze Field. The Razorbacks number 2, Ole Miss number 3 in the USA Today Baseball Coaches Poll. Big series, both teams atop the SEC West standings. Of course, a lot of history between the two teams. The week ahead is brought to you by the Grease Pig. For 20 years, they have specialized in serving UA students, faculty, and staff with 2 locations in Fayetteville on College Avenue and MLK Boulevard. The Grease Pig has experience for all your repair needs and, of course, complete service oil changes staffed with ASE certified master technicians. They also provide tires and alignment services at their location on College Avenue. The Grease Pig, it's all about taking care of you, and they're a proud sponsor of the week ahead. We are joined now by Parrish Alford of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. He's covered Ole Miss for several years, and Parrish, you're an institution on Ole Miss baseball, and what do you have to say about this series? This seems like one of the bigger ones that they've had come through Swayze Field in quite a while.
Well, I tell you what, I know that Ole Miss fans are hoping it goes different than the last time Arkansas visited Mississippi in a 2-3 series.
Yeah.
Wasn't that long ago. Look, I think there's going to be a lot of excitement. I think it's going to be a good weekend. Mississippi and Texas, I got some criticism from the president for lifting those COVID restrictions early. But the Rebels had 10,000 in the stadium for the Auburn series in one of those games, had like 27,000 for the weekend. So they've had big crowds already this season, and it's gone okay. We haven't seen an uptick in COVID numbers that were related to that. And I think there are going to be a lot of people there this weekend, and I think it's going to be a good thing. I think it's going to look like 2019.
When Arkansas went down to Duty Noble a couple of weeks ago, it's hard to get a smile out of Dave Van Horn during the season. He wears a pretty good poker face, but I got him to laugh when I told him that Mississippi State was reporting, I think, 6,100 for the Friday night game. And he laughed, and he said, there's no way. There had to be 12,000 people there. And I thought that was, Arkansas won those games, but it was a great home field advantage, I thought, for the Bulldogs. What are you expecting from an attendance standpoint? You mentioned that there were 27,000 tickets sold for the Auburn series. You'd have to believe it's going to be more for this week.
You know, Ole Miss typically, they don't usually get quite to 10,000 in a Friday night game. Usually Saturday they can get 10 or maybe 11. I think people are going to come out. I think people are ready to get out and be outdoors and be back on campus, be at events like this. And, you know, in addition to the fact that the team is playing well and there's so much on the line for the series, I mean, just there are a lot of factors that go into this. And we say that, you know, but there's also a line of thought as we continue to get closer to normal that people are going to take it slow. Again, that wasn't what we saw for the Auburn series. We didn't see people, you know, kind of easing back into it. We saw people who were eager to be back at baseball, and they turned out, and the crowds were big.
Ole Miss is coming off a series loss to Florida. I know they've won a couple of midweek games. But last weekend in Gainesville, what did you see? Florida won game one, Ole Miss won game two, and then it was a one-run game that the Gators won in game three.
Yeah, what we're seeing from Ole Miss right now offensively is they're just not getting many runs against starting pitching, particularly the Friday night game or the first game in a series. Now, it's not unusual for those games to be the scoring, but the Rebels, just a 1-0 win over Auburn. They won the game one in the series against Alabama, but they had just one run going into the ninth when they scored 8. And just one run in a 4-1 loss against Florida. They've got to do a better job of hitting SEC starting pitching, of hitting it earlier in games. And maybe that means manufacturing runs. And that could look different for Ole Miss this weekend. The big news over here on Monday was that SEC RBI leader Tim Elko tore his ACL in a collision against North Alabama. So he's out for this series and for Mississippi State and probably for more. They're hoping that they can manage it without surgery and that he can come back in some capacity and maybe DH, they can have his bat later this season. All of that remains to be seen. He certainly will not play this weekend against Arkansas. So it will be interesting to see if the approach changes for Ole Miss offensively, if they get those first two runners on, if then they bunt them over, if they do more hit and run, more base stealing. That's something to keep an eye on this weekend.
How big of a loss is that, Elko?
Well, it's massive. This has been an offense that's been good, not outstanding. It's, like I said, it's been an offense that needs to hit starting pitching better. We've seen Ole Miss put together a 5-run inning, a 6-run inning, some big innings like that, but we've not seen them consistently extend a lead or consistently score in other innings throughout a game. They have great big inning potential. Behind Elko, they've had Kevin Graham. He's having a good season right now from a power standpoint, but without Elko batting behind him, I think I switched them in the order there, teams are going to be able to pitch him differently. I think he's going to see that, and it'll be a challenge for him to continue to produce, and they need him to do that. And the odd thing for Ole Miss this season, I would say, is while this is by far the most significant injury that they've had to deal with, it's been an unusual season in that they've dealt with a lot of injuries. Now, they've been able to absorb them for the most part, and the guys that they were missing, Peyton Chatagnier, their leadoff hitter and second baseman, he's back. Doug Nikhazy, one of their weekend starters, missed two starts. He's back. They've been able to absorb those injuries and still play well. I think it's going to be much more difficult to absorb the loss of Tim Elko.
You mentioned Nikhazy. Gunnar Hoglund is back. Probably going into the season, most people thought Ole Miss had the best or the second best rotation in the SEC behind Vanderbilt, Rocker, and Leiter. What have you seen from the starters this year, especially Nikhazy and Hoglund, who we've seen before? And what does the rotation look like right now for the Rebels?
The rotation will be Hoglund in the number one spot. That's a change. It had been Nikhazy before the injury, but Nikhazy will go in the number two spot. And then Derek Diamond, a sophomore, will go in the third spot. I mean, the starters have been good, especially those first two. I mean, Diamond can hit a rough patch, usually around the fourth inning or something like that. But he can be pretty good as well. What I have seen from these guys is giving up solo home runs, mistake pitches, just kind of leaving the ball too far out over the zone or up in the zone, and teams have taken advantage of that. And that's really been how they have gotten to these starters when they have. But so often we've seen just really good performances. Dominant is a word that's overused, I think, but that certainly would apply to Gunnar Hoglund against Auburn in the SEC opener. 8 innings, just really, really kind of controlled Auburn, and the Rebels won 1-0. I got a 9th-inning home run to win that game. they've been good. The starters have been good. If there's been an area that's been a little suspect, it's been middle relief. Taylor Hightower has been really good on the back end.
Of course, Arkansas, their issue this year has been starting pitching. Not that starting pitching has been bad. It's just that they've been getting behind, maybe 4-1 and having to come back and rally. It seems like when Arkansas plays teams right now, it's the starters have the upper hand, and maybe Arkansas's bullpen has been better. Parrish, I know there's going to be a lot of talk this weekend about the 19 Super Regional when Ole Miss came up here. Really, really fun series, I thought. Over the first couple of games, the last one got away from Ole Miss, and Arkansas won 14-1. What do you remember about that Super Regional? And I wonder, what is the feeling about Arkansas baseball among the people that you talk with down at Ole Miss?
Well, number one, what I remember are really good crowds, and I know how Arkansas folks turn out and support all sports, not just baseball. So that was not surprising in the least, but it was a great atmosphere, great couple of days of baseball. I remember that, that third game did really get away from Ole Miss kind of early, and Bob Holt and I were kind of going back and forth at each other in the press box about who needed to go ahead and make travel arrangements for Omaha. But it became clear pretty early that Bob needed to get on the phone or get online and book a room.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I remember is just, gosh, there was a catch by Ryan O'Link in center field for Ole Miss that just kind of, ranks up there with some of the great catches that I've seen from outfielders in conference play. And the Ole Miss photographer got a nice picture of it, and he just really went up and made the grab. And that might have been their highlight in that third game. But that was kind of what I remember from that series. Now, there was a second part to the question. What was your second part?
I think the second part is how is Arkansas baseball viewed in Mississippi?
Look, I think it's viewed with great respect. I think you look at Dave Van Horn and what he's accomplished there. I think people see Arkansas on the schedule. And, college baseball is pretty good in Mississippi at all three schools. So it's not viewed with fear, but it's viewed with respect and reverence. And you see those guys on the schedule, and it's going to be a challenging series.
I was talking to Clay Madvick, who's going to call the game Friday night a little bit earlier, and we were talking about on Sunday, assuming they're able to play all three games, and I don't know why they wouldn't be able to, but on Sunday it'll be the 67th time that Dave Van Horn and Mike Bianco have been in opposing dugouts since they've been at Arkansas and Ole Miss, and that will eclipse the 66 times that Skip Bertman and Ron Polk faced each other. Now you saw both of their teams and those coaches. That's kind of I think it's kind of fascinating when you hear about a couple of coaches passing Bertman and Polk in anything. I think it's pretty fascinating, just the longevity of these two coaches and the series that they've had against each other.
Well, and there's a history between these two that predates Arkansas and Ole Miss. When you go back, I believe, and I might have this wrong, but I think they faced each other at least one year when Van Horn was at Northwestern State and Mike was at McNeese.
Okay.
I think they were there the same time. They might have played each other several times that year. So they've got a little bit of a history that predates Arkansas and Ole Miss, but I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, 67 is that's a lot of games.
Yeah. All right. Well, Paris, we appreciate your time and look forward to seeing your coverage this weekend down there in Oxford.
Thanks a lot, guys. Y'all have a good evening.
All right. Thanks, Paris. Paris Alford of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. That's the newspaper in Tupelo. He's been covering, you mentioned Bob Holt. He's been covering Ole Miss, I think, for just about as long as Bob's been covering the Razorbacks here. When you think about people who call or who cover Ole Miss, he's one of the first people that comes to my mind, and we appreciate him coming on. Of course, the game times this weekend are 6 o'clock on Friday, 4 o'clock on Saturday, and 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. And, Seth, I think Parrish may not quite – he may – it was kind of interesting to hear that. I don't think he knew there was some anti-Ole Miss sentiment in East and Southeast Arkansas. But I feel it. I hear it. You know, we kind of touched on this last week, the Ole Miss football series, and there are a lot of old-timers, obviously, who view Texas as Arkansas's rival, from their days in the Southwest Conference. I've always thought that the rival that Arkansas has is based on the geography of the fan. And because the state is so unique in that, it borders so many states, and you've got so many towns that are actually closer to other campuses that Arkansas might play frequently, say like Oxford. I mean, you can get to Oxford from Forest City in a much quicker amount of time than you can get from Forest City to Fayetteville. I think it's all about the geography. You know, if you live in El Dorado, you probably don't like LSU if you're a Razorback fan. If you live in Bella Vista, you might not like Missouri very much if you're a Razorback fan. It's all about the geography, but I hear it a lot of times. People say, hey, if we can get one win a year, we'd like it to be Ole Miss. And I think that's from a football standpoint. But I think you feel it in baseball, too. This has become a really entertaining rivalry, and I think it's one that both fan bases really want to win every year.
It was really interesting to me, give or take 15 minutes from where I grew up in Little Rock. It was the same amount of distance to get to Oxford as it was to get to Fayetteville.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and so, and that's Little Rock. That's the middle of the state.
Yeah.
You get into the eastern part of the state, out into the rice fields, and you're a lot closer to Oxford than you are to Fayetteville.
Yeah, so it does depend, I think, a lot on where the university is located. And I think, you know, some people want those rivals that are out west because Arkansas is located in the northwest portion. And out west, I mean to the west of the state. Mm-hmm. Because the university is located in that northwest portion. But when you think about the fans, and, you know, we talk about all the time that Arkansas is unique because statewide there is a pride for Arkansas. When you talk about those fans that are in El Dorado, or maybe out, if you're in Helena, West Helena, you know, they're right on the border with Mississippi. You know, it could probably take an hour, hour and a half to get to Oxford. I don't have that right in front of me, but I think it is dependent on where you live, and that makes a lot of sense because it's who's around you, right? It's who are you going up against every day in the office, or who you're conversating with when you go to church, when you're at the restaurants. You know, all those things matter, and if there is a large portion of one type of fan, then I think you're exactly right, Matt, that those are the people that you're going to feel the most rivalry with, because those are the people that you can either get the most shame from if your team loses, or you can rub it in their face if your team wins.
Now, I touched on this in the open. If Arkansas wins this weekend, they've got the leg up in the SEC West. I'd say more so than Ole Miss does, because Ole Miss still has to go to Starkville. Arkansas's already got that trip out of the way. If Arkansas wins the series this weekend, you're talking about their 5-1 at worst against probably the two other best SEC West teams, Ole Miss and Mississippi State. LSU, they might rebound this year. Of course, Jaden Hill's out for the year now for them, their Friday night starter. I don't see LSU rebounding. Doesn't mean that LSU won't win some series. It might beat Arkansas and Baton Rouge later. But I just see Arkansas being the best team in the SEC West if they can make – not only will they have beaten – Ole Miss and Mississippi State, but they've also beaten Auburn. They've also beaten Alabama. A&M comes to Fayetteville the week after. You've got to like Arkansas's chances to win at least two of three in that series. It seems to me like even though they've got some tough opponents from the East, they probably got the toughest crossover schedule this year. They've got to play Florida. They've got to play South Carolina. They've got to play Tennessee. Those are three really good teams, and Georgia's always capable.
I don't know, though. They don't have to play Vanderbilt. And I think Ole Miss has to play Vanderbilt. Or Mississippi. I can't remember. One of the Mississippi schools, their schedule does not – their cross schedule is tough.
Yeah.
I'll look it up here in a second.
But I think – I guess what I'm saying, though, is I think Arkansas's got a very – maybe underrated crossover schedule, because I think South Carolina is really good. And I think Tennessee is really good. And Arkansas's got to go to both of those both of those ballparks. So are they going to win the division this weekend? Obviously not. There's so much that can happen. But you've got to feel good. You've got to feel like you're at least in the driver's seat for the time being in the division if you can go to Oxford and win two of three. It's tough to win in Oxford. Arkansas has not played well down there. I think the last time Arkansas – look this up, Seth, and make sure I'm right. But I think the last time that Arkansas won a series in Oxford – was 2010.
I'm Googling.
And I actually remember I was at that series. Mike Bolsinger closed out game three that gave Arkansas, or maybe started and had a really nice start in game three. I think that's how that went. And Arkansas won the series. Arkansas won the first game. Ole Miss won the second game. What I remember about that one was that on Friday night, it was Drew versus Drew, Pomeranz versus Smiley on Friday night, big-time pitching matchup. There were something like, I think, 40 scouts out of that game. I mean, everybody wanted to be there and watch that pitching matchup between Pomeranz and Smiley. And Arkansas won on Friday, lost on Saturday, and won on Sunday to win the series. But overall, Mississippi or Ole Miss has had Arkansas's number for the most part in this series. They split their eight games, and it's just mind-blowing to think they played eight games in a single season in 2019. Ole Miss won two of three in Fayetteville during the regular season. They split two games in Hoover, and then Arkansas won the Super Regional 2-1. But for the most part, Ole Miss has had Arkansas's number. It doesn't matter whether it's been at Swayze or at Baum. They've been one of the few teams that have been able to come up here to Fayetteville and win series. In fact, Ole Miss is the only team to win a weekend series at Arkansas in the last 25 weekend series at Baum Stadium. Bob Walker Stadium.
Really?
Yeah. Now, you count super regionals in there. You count three-game, four-game weekend series in there. But of the last 25 three- or four-game series at Bob Walker, Ole Miss is the only team that's won. And you go back to 2017, Arkansas only lost two series in 2017, and one of those was to Ole Miss. And so Ole Miss has played Arkansas really well, and they played Arkansas really well down in Oxford especially.
Yeah, I'm going back. I just found it. Apparently in the media guide, we list it as Ole Miss, not Mississippi. So that took me just a second. But, yeah, going back, you said 2010?
I think 2010 was the last time Arkansas won a series down there.
You would be correct.
Yeah.
2010. Switching off every other year, they have lost all their series since then. I don't know that they have gotten swept, though. Let me double check.
They did get swept in 16 down there, I'm pretty sure.
And they were bad in 16, yeah. So yeah, that would make sense.
But
yeah.
I mean, but you think about that. They played in Oxford in 2012. That was the College World Series team. They didn't win the series. They played in Oxford in 2018. That was the College World Series runner-up. They didn't win the series. Won on Friday, lost the last two games down there. The last time they went to Oxford in 18, that was kind of the story of that season.
That 18 team didn't win a series away from Baum.
It's been a tough place to play. I think it's one of the more underrated, and it's interesting to me. I was going to say it's one of the more underrated places. It's interesting to me on the Ole Miss Twitter page. They don't call Swayze Field the best ballpark in college baseball. They know they can't. They can't claim that because you've got Duty Noble, you've got Vaughn Walker, you've got Alex Box, you got some other. I mean, Oklahoma State now has got this, you know, brand spanking new stadium that the Ballpark Digest just named the best in college baseball. But what they call it at Swayze, the best atmosphere in college baseball. And they might be right. It's a great, great atmosphere down there for those games, and it gives them a great home field advantage.
Yeah, it does. I think you are right that they pick their words very carefully there, which is you have to be careful with how you present this to everybody. But yeah, the home run, the Swayze showers whenever you hit a home run. Ugh. And whatever is in your drink goes on the people beside you. I don't necessarily know that I would appreciate that. And, you know, in the time of COVID, that may not be the smartest move, but I can guarantee you're not going to tell those fans with their red solo cups in the outfield not to do that, especially in a 2-3 series this weekend. So I think that the atmosphere is second to none. I mean, they've got good tradition there. Mike Bianco's really set something there at the University of Mississippi.
Absolutely.
But I just don't know. When it comes to baseball, as a Razorback fan, I don't know. You Razorback fans do know what you want to do or who you want to beat, but for just looking on the outside in, I think you'll take a win over either one of them either time. But yeah, the atmosphere, it's just kind of strange that Arkansas' schedule lines up to where they have to go to both Mississippi schools.
Mm-hmm. And LSU.
And LSU every
year. Every year. Yeah, exactly. I think we're trying to say the same thing. Something's got to give this weekend. One last thought. Ole Miss 16-3 at home this year. Arkansas is 8-1 away from Baum Walker Stadium. They, of course, won the three games at the College Baseball Showdown, won 2 of 3 at Louisiana Tech. That series win continues to look better and better every week. Louisiana Tech, I think, is maybe the best Power 5 team non-Power 5 team in the country. Maybe the only other team that could challenge them for that designation would be East Carolina. But I think if you look at Louisiana Tech's resume, it's more impressive. They're 2-2 against Arkansas and Ole Miss this year, the Bulldogs. And there's a chance, I think, that they could be a regional host at the end of the season. And if there's not a regional host, they're the number 2 seed. You do not want to see in your bracket if you're the host. They could make a very long weekend on a hosting team if they don't get a regional down in Ruston. But Arkansas won there, and of course they swept at Mississippi State. This is a really good team playing away from home. Asked Dave Van Horn about it a couple of weeks ago when they won in Starkville. He said that he thinks his team just takes a very mature approach to going on road trips, a very businesslike approach. And he credited that to their success so far away from Fayetteville. So Arkansas and Ole Miss, three times this weekend. Also coming up in the week ahead, Arkansas will play UAPB. Arkansas Pine Bluff twice on Tuesday and Wednesday. Those game times will be 6:30 and 4 o'clock. Those will be games 4 and 5 this season for the Razorbacks against in-state competition. They've already beaten UCA once, beaten UALR twice, and they'll play Arkansas State in the final midweek game of the year in May. UAPB, not a very good team this year. I think they lost something like their first 12 or 13, 14 games of the season. So Arkansas should feel pretty good about those two games that they play in the midweek, although you never know what's going to happen in the midweek.
Going back to something that we touched on, Matt, just a second. So Arkansas's cross, you mentioned them, their cross-division opponents. Would you rather have them or would you rather Ole Miss's, which are South Carolina, same as Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Georgia, and Florida?
Florida. Yeah, I mean, it's I think there's some give and take there. Arkansas gets to play Florida in Fayetteville. Ole Miss had to go to Florida. Arkansas has to go to South Carolina. Ole Miss gets South Carolina at home. Ole Miss gets Vanderbilt at home toward the end of the season. That's it. I mean, that's that. You heard Parrish talking about how COVID restrictions have been lifted in Mississippi and how the crowds are going to continue to get bigger. That's in May. That's May 14th, 15th, and 16th. And can you imagine how big of a crowd that's going to be if these two teams continue to win at the rate that they're going to be? You know, great home field advantage there for Ole Miss. So, you know, I think there's some give and take there. I still think that Arkansas's got a very hard cross-division schedule, because I think Tennessee's underrated. Even though they're like the number, 6 team in the country right now?
Yeah, they're moving up.
I still think people are sleeping on them. And Arkansas's got to go there. They got to go to South Carolina. Those are a couple of tough trips. But first up to Ole Miss, and we'll be back next week to recap that. We appreciate our guest today, Clay Matvick of ESPN and the SEC Network, Parrish Alford of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. We also appreciate Matt Hobbs for his thoughts about Kevin Copps. We will be back next week to recap the Ole Miss series and UAPB series and to look ahead to Texas A&M coming to Fayetteville. For Seth Campbell, I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.